Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, listeners. Before we start this episode, I'd like to just read out a comment that was written on my website by a Lepster called Isabel just a couple of days ago. And here is Isabel's comment. So she wrote, "Hello, Luke." "Hello, Isabel. I'm so glad to know that you're sponsored by iTalki because I first discovered you through that page. I was casually reading some of the comments in the discussion section and someone asked about how to improve his listening skills. And in the replies, there was a Lepster advising him that your podcasts were the best podcasts in the world and super fun. Thanks very much. And then another fan of you replied expressing his joy of knowing that there were more listeners of you on iTalki. And immediately I felt curious. So I searched for Luke's English podcast and now I'm addicted." Good. Good. My evil plan is working. So I've been on iTalki since 2013. So I'm glad that you're with that page too. iTalki is very good and really useful. I've met many people from different parts of the world there. And it was on iTalki where I decided to write and talk in English for the first time with native speakers. It was a great experience. So there you go. That was a testimony from Isabel, who's used iTalki to improve her English. And also, it seems that there are loads of Lepsters all over iTalki as well, which is kind of nice. Lots of LEP ninjas somehow have infiltrated iTalki. And they're already there, in fact. They've been there for a couple of years, it seems. So, yeah, iTalki seems to have worked for Isabel. It could work for you too. teacherluke.co.uk/talk, or just click an iTalki logo on my website. All right, so that's it for this this mention at the beginning. Let's get down to the new episode, and here it is. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. This episode is called Murder Mile Walks, Stories of London's Most Infamous and Shocking Murders. And in this one, we're going to hear about some true crimes that happened in parts of central London. Yes, all the stories that you will hear in this episode are true. And you should know in advance that this episode does contain some graphic descriptions of horror and extreme violence. And on top of that, there is some swearing at the end of the episode too. So this is an adult episode of the podcast, recorded by adults, featuring adult conversation between two adults about adults doing adult things to other adults. And it's presented here by an adult for other adults to listen to. Okay? So the point that I'm making here is that it's not for kids, this episode. So if you don't mind a bit of horror and some strong language, then great. But if you're easily shocked, then please be cautious, okay? Just be prepared. If horror and stuff like that isn't your cup of tea, just don't listen to this, all right? I don't want you to be upset or offended. But to be honest, the content in this one is no worse than some of the stuff that you see in the average horror film, or the stuff that you get in an episode of CSI or Grey's Anatomy, or the kind of content that you might find in a true crime documentary or something like that. It's not that different to those sorts of things. But anyway, I thought I should warn you about the level of the content in this episode. And now that I have warned you, let's continue. So welcome to the podcast again. This is a conversation with my friend Moz, who's been on the podcast before. You might remember Moz from previous episodes, such as the Brighton Fringe Festival series, the Drunk Episode 2, which was recorded on Moz's boat. So Moz has been living in London for ages, but a couple of years ago he decided to buy a canal barge That's a narrow boat, okay? He decided to just buy a narrow boat and then live in it at various locations in the London canal system. Because, I don't know if you know, but London's got loads of canals. There's like all sorts of waterways in London. They go, the canals connect the city up. You can walk, in fact, along the canal towpath all the way from, you know, Paddington Station, like Little Venice in the west, all the way through Regent's Park, by London Zoo, round the back of King's Cross Station, through parts of Islington, and then down towards Limehouse near the River Thames. And the canals are also connected to other waterways. You can't take a canal boat onto the River Thames, I think, but there are other little rivers and things that branch out into the east of London, and you can sort of, you know, if you have a narrow boat, you can take the boat up those rivers, like the River Lee goes up into the east towards the area where they had the Olympic Games a couple of years ago. So lots of canals and waterways that you might not be aware of. So, Moz now lives on his boat, and he just takes it around various locations in the London canal system. So he kind of lives all over the city. It sounds like a pretty nice life. Instead of just living in one location the whole time, he moors the boat at different locations in the canal and river system in London and enjoys a more peaceful side of London life, with all the ducks and the geese and fishing and pubs and knife crime. Well, maybe not the knife crime. Let's hope not, anyway. So Moz used to work as a producer of comedy TV shows at the BBC. He also produced, wrote and performed in a few of his own comedy theatre shows at the Brighton and Edinburgh Fringe Festivals over the years. And all his shows featured slightly dark subject matter, but in a comedic way. So those shows that he did were basically sort of horror stories that in the end turn out to be quite funny and sweet. Now, fairly recently, Moz launched a small tour company. It's a company that offers walking tours in the Soho area. You know those tours that you can join where there's a tour guide who shows you around some interesting spots in the city and you follow the guide around as he or she holds an umbrella in the air or something. Have you seen that? Very common in London. You see kind of some person walking through the street with an umbrella in the air and then a whole crowd of people following after them like disciples. It's quite a strange thing to see, really. Like, why are these people following this person with an umbrella in the air? What is it, like a sort of sacred umbrella? Follow the holy umbrella as we walk through the sacred streets of London. You know, they're going to kind of meet and then sort of bow down and worship the umbrella. It's a bit weird. Obviously, it's just a way for the tour guide to, you know, be noticed so everyone can follow him or her, right? That's the boring reason. I quite like the idea that they're all just sort of disciples of the Umbrella King and they're kind of following the holy umbrella through the mystical streets of a city. That's just the way I see it. Anyway, you know those kinds of tour guides, those city tours, and, you know, the tour guide stops at various locations and talks to you about different things and you listen and you'd rather be in the pub or something. You know, they're nice, but they're a little bit boring sometimes, right? You know what I mean? Well, Moz's tours are quite different. And in fact, they're proving to be very successful already, with some great reviews appearing on the travel website TripAdvisor. The thing about Moz's tours is that they're original, because not only are they presented by Moz himself, and, you know, he's one of a kind, isn't he, in his own special way. It's not just that. It's not just because you've got Moz, but also the tours are all about murder. A lot of murder, in fact. They're all about real murders that took place on the streets of London, in Soho, to be specific. Now, I'm not going to tell you more. I will let Moz do that. But you can just listen and find out all the grisly details as they come up in the conversation. So we're almost ready to start listening to this conversation now, but I would like to just give you another warning now before you listen to the episode. So here it is, warning. Most of you won't think this is necessary, but I would like to just ask you again to please be aware that this episode contains some descriptions of explicit violence and horror. We're talking about murder, of course. So I think we deal with the subject in a grown-up and responsible way. But if you're, you know, if you're sensitive or if you're playing this to young listeners, then please use the maximum amount of discretion, okay? What I mean by that is that it's up to you to decide if you want to listen to the whole thing. And just bear in mind, it's supposed to be for adults. So, as well as all the murder and the general chat that you'll get in this episode, there is loads of great vocabulary, of course. Not to mention some really good stories, all based on proper historical research done by Moz himself. And everyone knows that listening to stories is a great way to learn English. So, as you listen, try to follow the conversation. You know, just obviously try and follow what's going on and just try and follow the conversation as it evolves and moves, you know, naturally through the subject. I'm not teaching you specific things in this one. I'm just inviting you to listen to some natural conversation between native speakers. But try to notice language as it comes up. You know, try and be mindful about the English as you listen to it. Would you like it if I produced a follow-up episode in which I explain all of the vocabulary, like I did with the Craig Wieland interview? Would you like that? Let me know. Also, I'm considering the idea of launching something called study packs. These would be like bits of downloadable content that would help you learn English from Luke's English podcast, okay? So imagine this. There would be study packs on the website. You click study packs and there is a big list of these study packs. And the study packs would relate to different episodes of the podcast. For example, a conversation with a friend. Let's say it's this one. My conversation with Moz. And you can listen to the conversation free as part of the podcast. But then you would have the option, if I did this idea, you'd have the option to download the study pack for this episode. And in the study pack, you would get essentially an MP3 download, which is me explaining key bits of vocabulary and language, clarifying meaning, giving you chances to repeat after me, going through bits of grammar that I think would be useful for you to understand. And also, you know, looking at some of the pronunciation, you know, really kind of getting down into the nitty-gritty of the language and explaining it to you and helping you to learn it. So that would be the MP3 file that would be in the study pack. And then also in the study pack, you would get a PDF download. And the PDF would basically be all of the language that I'm explaining in the MP3. And then some self-study exercises, like practice exercises, just like the kind of thing you get in a grammar book or a textbook, you know, exercises that would give you, you know, controlled practice with that language that I'd explained in the study pack MP3 and that you'd heard in the original episode, all right? So MP3 with me explaining it all to you, and then a PDF download with exercises, controlled practice, and all the answers as well. Does that sound good? Does that sound like a good idea to you? Would you be interested in that, yes or no? And also, that wouldn't be free. That's peripheral content that you'd have to pay for. But, you know, I think if you're keen to learn and you really want to make the most of, you know, my teaching experience and the podcast, you could download those things. So there would be a price. I wonder what you think would be a fair price for a study pack that would contain all of that learning potential. Let me know. Okay, so we're almost ready. Before we get to the murder stories, we talk about swearing. So back to the conversation with Moz. Before we start talking about murder and killing and things like that, we talk a little bit about swearing and swearing on TV and swearing on Luke's English podcast. And we discuss the question of whether or not I should bleep out swear words on this podcast. So the first question is to bleep or not to bleep, okay? And as a former producer of BBC comedy television shows, Moz has some very wise words to say about the subject. So there's a bit of conversation about swearing, and then we get into the details of Moz's new project, Murder Mile Tours. Okay? So that's it for the introduction. We're now ready to get started and listen to the interview. I will see you on the other side of the conversation, not the other side of existence. I'm not going to see you in the afterlife. No, I'll see you on the other side. I'll talk to you on the other side of the conversation. I'm now going to get out of the way and stop rambling. Here is my chat with Moz. Here we go. Moz, hello. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me back.
It's a pleasure to have you.
Cheeky.
Yeah, well, you know, I like to welcome my guests onto my episodes as much as possible within reason.
That is a welcome.
Yeah, it certainly is. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
And how are you today?
Excellent. Yeah, it's a beautiful day in London. I'm sitting on the boat, just enjoying the sunshine.
Whereabouts are you, actually? Because, you know, the boat, I imagine, is moored somewhere. Whereabouts are you?
I am right next to the Olympic Stadium, so in Stratford.
Ah, right.
So I'm literally within a two-minute walk of, what was it, the big arena? I'm near the Velodrome.
Near the Velodrome, so it's sort of near the Olympic Park.
Yeah, which is great. It still looks beautiful, and they've just built a beach there, which is great.
Nice.
I know.
So are people still using the Olympic Park? Because I remember when, you know, the Olympics ended, lots of people were saying, what are they now going to do with this massive Olympic Park and all these facilities? Are they going to be used? What are they being used for?
It's still being used as, what have they done? They've turned it into like a big playground, and there's going to be some new shops built there and expensive apartments. And they've just opened up a very old canal system in there and rebuilt it. So, it's looking brilliant.
Nice. Okay.
And good old Lord Coe.
Lord Coe. He's
thank
the
you,
one,
Lord Coe.
He's the guy responsible for the project.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you're in your boat, and I guess, where are you? You're sort of moored in a canal, I suppose. You're not on the River Thames, of course.
Yeah. No, the great thing about London is it's full of canal networks. So I'm actually on what's known as the River Lee, which is slightly tidal. Well, it's not tidal; it just goes up and down a lot. So you have to keep an eye on the water.
Okay.
But it's beautiful.
Right, and you get internet on the boat?
Just about. I've got an internet dongle, so as long as I've probably shown you already, but for your listeners, I've had to put the dongle on a 3-meter cord, and it's peeping out of my roof at the moment so I can get a signal, because the boat is made of steel.
I see. So you need to stick the dongle out of a window in order to get a signal.
Yeah.
But it's not the first time you've sticked your dongle out of the window.
Hey! A bit of cheekiness for your listeners.
Not the first time you've stuck your long dongle out of a window.
It's only about 3 inches long.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. All right. Do you remember the last time you were on this podcast, Moz? Do you remember what happened last time?
I remember what happened afterwards.
Really? I don't.
I remember being... Can I say this to your listeners?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what you're going to say.
Oh, okay, then. Well, you might... Well...
If it's incredibly rude, I'll edit it out, and then I'll find some way of explaining it. But, you know...
It was... No, we were moored up in a nice part of Little Venice, which is a very nice part of West London, which is like Venice, only a lot smaller. And we were doing the podcast. And I think we'd had quite a bit to drink.
Well, not all of us, to be fair. Certain members of the party had consumed more alcohol than others.
Yeah. Well, I was quite worried, because what I did there was I double moored, which means... because London is so busy, what you tend to do is moor next to other people. So one boat will tie itself to another boat.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy next to me, Dave, very nice guy, I didn't want to step on his boat or anything because it's bad manners. Unfortunately, after the last podcast, I was a little bit unwell. I opened my side window.
Drunk, he means, basically.
Yes, I was very drunk. I opened my side window to be sick. And I accidentally threw up all over his boat. Oh, you swore then, Luke.
Yeah, I did.
Edit that out.
I let out a swear word.
An F-bomb.
I don't know if anyone noticed.
I did.
You can go back and rewind and double check if you really want to.
Is that like an Easter egg?
What, a little hidden swear word?
Yeah.
I suppose so. Yeah. I have a slightly complicated relationship with swearing on the podcast.
Oh,
essentially, essentially the point is that, I don't want to offend anyone. And yes, at the same time, I don't want to. I want the podcast to stay authentic. And so, you know, people swear sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Do you think it's, when is it appropriate to swear and when is it not appropriate to swear? What do you think, Moz?
Do you know what? I spent 10 years at the BBC as the guardian of swear words.
What do you mean?
Effectively my job. And I had to make a lot of decisions about what was acceptable language.
So, wait a minute. You worked in
comedy.
Comedy and production of comedy television programs.
Yeah. But part of my job was trying to decide what was acceptable language. So whether you could get away with, what time of day you could get away with F words.
Yeah.
And if you were to drop an F word, I won't explain that to the audience, but
they know what that means.
Whether it's right to bleep or not to bleep, because can it be more offensive if you bleep? So what's your policy on this podcast?
Okay, I'll give you a summary as briefly as possible. So I used to do my position used to be don't swear on the podcast.
Yeah.
I don't want to offend people. I don't want to, have problems. Then I got plenty of messages from people saying, please, can you do something about swearing? We want to know about swearing. Like, okay. Lots of requests. Maybe the most commonly requested thing was like, teach us some stuff about swearing. And also, I thought, yeah, well, it's the podcast. It's not a classroom. I don't have a boss. I can do whatever I want. Mm. That's the magic of podcasting. You can do whatever you want. So I thought, I'll do that. I'll take that step and I'll do swearing. And so I did a whole episode with my brother, which is a full guide to how to swear in British English. It was fully, deeply researched. I prepared for it in advance. I created a list with each word graded, with a star rating.
Wow.
Going back from the old-fashioned swear words, which are not offensive anymore, like damn and blast. And then through the milder stuff, like piss, piss off.
Your voice dipped as you said that.
I did. Well, I'm still a little unsure about whether I should be saying those words on the podcast. Yeah. But, anyway, I've decided it's kind of okay. But so I did a full episode, all about swear words with every single rude word in it. And people loved it, generally speaking. And then, every now and then swearing would happen. And I was still unsure about it. I went through a period where I bleeped swear words out, which was not entirely successful for several reasons. One of those reasons was that it took me a lot of time
to
go through and bleep them out. And the second reason is that I did actually get messages from people saying, why are you bleeping out the swear words? We want to hear the swear words because, we're learning the language. We want to hear natural British English as it really is spoken in many contexts.
And that makes sense.
Yeah, and they understand that, when people are with friends, that they swear sometimes, And it would be somehow inauthentic of me to somehow adapt my language because it's almost patronizing to say to people, I'm not going to swear to you. I'm going to give you some false version of the language. So that basically the philosophy is as much as it is appropriate, and when the context is appropriate, swearing happens. With the understanding from my listeners that they are listening to, essentially, they're listening into a natural conversation between two friends.
Yes. Okay.
Even though it's an interview, it's slightly formalised. It is an interview. But
I suppose it's different between podcasts and comedy. Because in comedy, what we would tend to do is quite often deliberately bleep the swear word. Because it's actually funnier.
Yeah, well, that again, Moz, that's a reason why I used to bleep them. I went through this phase where I was bleeping them out, and it was kind of funny in a way. And some of my friends listened to it, and they were like, I found it really funny when you bleeped out the swear words. So, I realized I'm bleeping them out for comedy purposes. I'm not really bleeping them out for the right reason. And also, when I did bleep them out, you could still tell which word it was. It was still obvious.
Yeah.
I didn't want to bleep out the entire sentence because that would be counterintuitive. That would go against the entire purpose of this podcast, which is to present language.
Yeah.
You know?
We used to have to bleep with the F word, we had to bleep from the middle of the F to the end of the K to just in the middle of the K. So you could still hear the first opening two letters.
You could still hear F
and K.
So it's like F.
Yeah.
So if, for example, if some, you know, if you said, "Oh, F off,"
yeah,
you could, you know what people are saying. If you hear,
oh yeah, just totally,
like feek off, feek off.
the ruling always was: if you can't hear the word, then it's not a word.
If you can't hear the word, then it's not a word. But that's a legal argument, isn't it?
Yeah, that was part of it. Yeah,
that's a legal argument in case someone, you know, makes a complaint, and you can say, well, in fact, no swearing was included because feek
could have been flick.
Exactly. Although everyone knows from context that it's
fuck.
Yeah, oh, there we go. The first one has landed.
That one. You can bleep that one.
I can blow.
Or maybe I might go bleep.
I think I'm going to have to bleep that one just because I think it's appropriate at this point.
But for comedic purposes, it was very funny.
Well, we will let the audience be the judge of that. So what's your professional opinion, Moz? What shall I do? Shall I be bleeping swear words? Shall I just swear, or shall I just try not to include swear words? What do you think?
Do you know what? I agree with your listeners because they're learning about language and pronunciation. I think it's important that they hear everything. So if someone like me were to drop some major F-bombs, I think they need to hear them fully, okay, which I won't do.
I think that I would ask you as a guest on the podcast to exercise your discretion.
I'm being very, very cautious about what I'm saying already, as you can probably tell.
I know you are. Yeah, yeah. all right. Okay, well, it's very interesting to have that discussion with someone who's worked professionally in broadcasting and who knows the ins and outs and the complexities of, you know, swearing in a broadcast or a podcast. It's very interesting, that is. I'd love to talk to you. Yeah.
Sometimes it's about mostly about content as well. Context.
Context.
And also multiple use. So sometimes in a program, they would say, okay, you've got 10 instances of the F word in this program. We will give you 3. So we'd have to, even though it's the same word, you'd have to go in and edit out 7 versions of that word in order to make it acceptable, even though it's the same word.
So it's not the word itself, it's the frequency of the word.
And also the phrasing of it. And, do you know, someone could, like, you slipped in the F word earlier on, it was quite subtle, whereas mine, where you said, we're going to have to edit that, I think that was more about, I said it in quite an aggressive way. I said it quite hard, whereas yours was slipped into conversation.
Right, mine was almost unintentional. It just it popped out because you said something, and because you told the story about how you were sick outside of your window last time you in the aftermath of the last podcast. You puked out of a window onto a friend's boat, which must have been quite embarrassing. Certainly the next day. I don't know if you cared about it at the time.
I tried to clean off some off the boat. Okay. But in the morning, I knew that the man in the boat next door to me was leaving at 9 o'clock, and I was too hungover to wake up. But I heard him washing it off.
Okay. Well, I guess we should probably leave the vomit behind at this point. So anyway, you said that story, and I understandably was slightly shocked, and an F word popped out. And if my listeners don't believe me, they can go back and have another listen, and they might be able to identify it. But
I think it was minute 7.
Minute 7.
Yeah,
you think so? Okay.
Yeah, it's around then.
All right. So in that case, that's less offensive somehow that it happened naturally, whereas you used it with intention.
Yes.
It was a premeditated swear.
Oh yeah.
But you also, I think that you also used it with a certain level of irony.
Yeah.
You didn't
deliberately.
You didn't do it to shock. You did it as a joke.
Yes. I think because we both knew that I shouldn't say it, therefore I deliberately did say it. And I put it at the end of the sentence, so it would be even funnier.
I wonder if my listeners found it funny, you know? I don't know. But, like, it's interesting that so as a BBC professional or ex-BBC, you know, if you, looking at it through that for that professional point of view,
yeah,
would you have bleeped out your own F word?
If this was a live program going out, no, if this was a recorded program going out at 2 in the afternoon, definitely. In fact, that whole scene probably would have been edited and removed. If it was 8 o'clock, it would have been taken out as well. But after 9 o'clock, meh, probably accepted.
And the reason for that is that that's the 9 o'clock watershed that they have on British TV, which is basically after 9 p.m. You can have slightly rude, you know, fairly rude stuff like the F word. I don't know why I'm keep saying the F word. I suppose I'm saying it because, I mean, Louis C.K., the comedian, obviously does that famous bit where he's saying, you know, don't say the F word, because all you're doing is you're putting the word fuck into someone's head, you know? All right. So I might bleep that one out again, just because this is the bleeping swear words conversation. But
there's an interesting, there's a series in Britain that, hopefully your listeners won't know about, called Mrs. Brown's Boys.
Mrs. Brown's Boys. Some of them might, but because I know it's very popular in the UK, and there's a movie, Mrs. Yes. Brown's Boys. All right.
He's basically a man in a dress pretending to be an old Irish mother. But he's incredibly sweary. And the problem with this series is it went out on BBC One, which is the BBC's main channel, where you get a lot of family entertainment, but it went out at 10 o'clock at night, and the live show is incredibly sweary. I mean, he would drop the F-bomb 100 times.
Wow.
Maybe 200 times. He'd also drop the other bombs as well.
Right. Let's not go down that route. Yeah.
But when they transferred it to TV, the big bosses, like the controllers of the channels who were in charge of the output, said you can't swear that many times in a 30-minute episode. You can't say the F word 30 times. So what they would do is re-edit the script. So instead of saying the F word, he would say bucking.
Oh, right.
Or buck. Or if you listen carefully, he uses the Irish term, which is feck.
Okay. So, all right, this is very interesting. So they've replaced in the script intentionally in order to get around the problem that we're talking about. He replaced the F word with buck and bucking. And then the Irish word that you said was feck.
Feck.
Which is not the same word as the F word.
No, and it's deemed inoffensive as well. So it's not counted as a swear word.
Now, there's another TV show that everyone might know, and that's Father Ted.
Hey!
Fantastic show. Irish comedy. The word feck was used a lot in that show. Hello, listeners. I'm just interrupting myself here in order to play you a little extract from an episode of Father Ted. Father Ted was an Irish comedy about a group of priests who lived on an island. And it did feature the word feck sometimes. It was a kind of a satirical show, really. And you're now going to hear a clip of a character called Mrs. Doyle talking about a novel that she read. And the novel contained lots of swearing. And apparently Mrs. Doyle doesn't like swearing, but she loves to complain about swearing. She seems to enjoy using the swear words that she's complaining about. So it's a bit ironic, really. But this is a clip from Father Ted.
I read a bit of one of them once. God, I couldn't finish it. The language, unbelievable.
It's a bit gritty, but that's the modern world, Mrs. Doyle.
Well, it was a bit much for me, Father. Feck this and feck that.
Yes, Mrs. Doyle.
You big bastard. Oh, dreadful language. You big hairy arse. You big fecker. Fierce stuff. And, of course, the F word, Father. Bad F word. Worse than feck. You know the one I mean?
Yes, I do, Mrs. Doyle.
F you. F your effing wife. Oh, I don't know why they have to use language like that. I stick this effing pitchfork up your hole. Oh, that was another one. Oh, yes.
I see what you mean, Mrs. Doyle.
Bastard this and bastard that. You can't move for the bastards in her novels. It's more to all bastards.
Is it, Mrs. Doyle?
You bastard,
anyway.
You fecker, you bollocks. Get your bollocks out of my face. I'm just talking
to. And that's Father Ted.
Hey.
Fantastic show. Irish comedy. The word feck was used a lot in that show. And it's, you can say, ah, feck off. And it's okay because it's not the F word. Isn't it ridiculous?
Considering it's just one letter out, but you know exactly what the word is. Mm. But it's inoffensive.
Right, okay.
How did we end up doing 20 minutes on swearing?
Welcome to Luke's English Podcast. So the reason that we ended up talking about swearing is because you talked about the last time you were on Luke's English Podcast when you drank a little bit too much beer because you were excited naturally to be on the podcast. And then you ended up, having to, what's a discreet way of saying it? You had to
mop up.
You had to mop up a little bit of mess that you caused on Dave's boat. Dave was on the podcast as well, if you remember.
He was. He was very exciting, wasn't he?
He was. That was a fun episode, I have to say, which listeners can still listen to. It's the name of the podcast episode I'm talking about is called On a Boat.
Oh,
because we recorded it on a boat.
That's clever. That is clever.
We were joined by Paul Langton and Alex Love and Dave.
Yes. Yeah, and Dave, yeah.
So anyway, after recording that, you had a little bit of a problem and you described it in certain level of detail, and that caused me to react unintentionally with the F word without really thinking about it. And then we ended up discussing the ins and outs of swearing and whether it's appropriate to broadcast swearing in television programmes. And that's because you used to work for the BBC in comedy production.
No more.
No more. These days, what are you doing?
I run a tour company in the centre of London. So in a nice part of London called Soho, which is just off Oxford Street, in between Oxford Street and Shaftesbury Avenue. And basically, I run a two-hour guided tour of some of the most horrific and grisly murders in Soho.
So this is a sort of alternative tour experience.
Yes. Right.
Now, we know many of my listeners will have been to London. They know that when you go to London, you can take, you know, these tours around the city. What are the most usual? What are the normal, common, most ordinary tourist tours that people tend to go on?
That was a good sentence, Luke.
It was, I know. I'm very good at making these long sentences that go on forever. What I meant is your tour company is a bit different. What are the normal tours?
Most tours are kind of regular guided tours of the tourist attractions of Soho or in my field, which is kind of murder mystery, you can do kind of Jack the Ripper tours. Mm-hmm. Everyone's heard of Jack the Ripper, the kind of serial killer who attacked in the late 1880s across Whitechapel in East London. Mm-hmm. I actually started with this, my own tour, because Jack the Ripper didn't exist.
Really?
He did not exist.
But what about all of the stories and the books that have been written about Jack the Ripper? The movie, for example, that movie with Johnny Depp in it?
Yeah, hundreds of books, many of which I have read. But that's the problem, is that when you look into the history of Jack the Ripper, they can't define how many women, a.k.a. prostitutes, he murdered. There's either three or five, which they call the canonical five, 7, 9, 11, or 22. And of the canonical five, which these are the five that they say Jack the Ripper definitely killed, the last one, Mary Ann Kelly, they've just proved it was her husband who killed her. So that's where I started with my walk, was the fact that if you go on a Ripper tour, A, the stories don't exist, there's no physical proof. Mm-hmm. B, the locations no longer exist anymore. All of the Ripper locations except the Ten Bells pub have been demolished. Mm-hmm. So my walk is real stories, real people, which I've investigated from the National Archives in London and London's most famous court, the Old Bailey. Mm-hmm. And basically it's a two-hour walk, 18 murderers, 21 locations, which are all real. You can look into the windows and see where the murderer would have been. 75 corpses in 2 hours, in just under 1 mile.
Oh my God.
So wow. It's intensive. It's you come on the walk and you just, within three streets, no, actually on the same street, we have three serial killers.
That's a lot of murder in just 2 hours.
Even in the first 10 minutes, we cover, I think it's 48 murders.
Wow. 48 murders, that's insane.
Yeah, I know. Even one building is the famous Denmark Street fire. Well, not really famous. Most of the locals don't know about it, but it was, yeah, it's quite a horrific murder that where 38 innocent people died in 1980.
Okay, now I love the sound of this because I like murder mysteries. Yeah, I like a bit of, you know. You know, it's like the sort of those true crime stories that you can read, murder mystery stories, the sort of movies and popular fiction about murder, Jack the Ripper stories and stuff like that. You know, obviously it's a bit sick, it's a bit weird and dark, but it's entertaining and it's harmless stuff. It's just history. You know, there's a big industry in crime stories and thrillers and stuff, isn't there?
The way that I kind of tackle this is that a lot of people approach kind of murder mystery walks looking for the grisly details, but what I've actually done is looked into the history of each of these characters and tried to find you something really either sad or beautiful about their lives. So instead of just approaching a building and I'd go, here a lady was murdered and she was stabbed, and we walk on, what I do is I tell you about her life and something that's very important that kind of guides you through and goes, you either pity them or sometimes you actually pity the murderer.
Right. I know. If you're okay with it, I'd like you to tell us a couple of those stories today on the podcast. I just know that some of my listeners might be thinking, murder tours, that's a bit weird, isn't it? But it's not just you, as you've established. There are other tours, particularly those Jack the Ripper tours in East London. But yeah, you've already explained how you're different to those and how yours is based on like all of this research and all of the details into the personal lives of the victims and the murderers. So
it took about a year to research.
Did it really?
And it was only, I mean, I'm only dealing with 1 square mile of Soho, which is effectively 5 streets. But what I did was, I didn't actually know how many murders were in Soho, but I just sat there and thought, I know Soho, let's investigate. And I started digging around.
Not literally.
Sometimes.
No, you weren't literally digging in the ground, were you?
Sometimes it felt like it. Okay. But no, I would just start going through the archives and finding different murders. And my kind of rule is the building has to still exist. Mm-hmm. It's a very strict rule because I'm of the opinion that if you're going to tell someone a story, they have to be able to physically touch something.
Okay.
So like if it's a window, I want people to look into the window and imagine seeing the victim or the killer walking past the window. But no, I researched about 200 murders. Mm-hmm. And then I whittled it down to 50 that I liked.
Yeah.
And then I had to physically go around Soho looking to see if the building still existed. And then I wove all of the stories together into kind of a multiple narrative. So if your listeners were to come on the tour, it wouldn't be 18 different murderers, or it would be, but the stories are connected.
Wow. So it's like one long kind of 2-hour narrative that includes all of these other little stories in it as well.
Including a murder that's still to this day, 80 years on. Actually, it's a multiple murder. 5 women were murdered and it still remains unsolved today. But on my walk, you solve the murder.
Wow. So you also become a detective during the experience.
It's great.
It sounds amazing.
Nobody's solved it yet.
Really? Have you got the solution?
I've got half the solution.
Right.
But it's amazing because there's lots. What I do is I take you on the journey. You visit all of the murder locations for what it's known as the Soho Strangler. And I show you all of the suspects and we start whittling through all the suspects, kind of working out who may have murdered who, why, for what reason. And at the end, you solve it almost.
Can I just stop you on that expression, whittling through
and
whittling down? I thought it would be worth just mentioning that, just because like normally when you're whittling, it's like you have a stick in your hand and a knife in the other hand, and you sort of like cut the stick with your knife and then you make it sharp. That's whittling, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's like you remove bits of the wood and you form it into something else, like, for example, like a peg or just a sharp piece of wood. So whittling something down is like removing little bits piece by piece. So in your case, when you're investigating a murder, you're whittling down the situation. You're cutting off bits, refining the case.
Yeah,
you're cutting away things that are not in fact related to the case, cutting away facts that are not related, until you're left with finally the shape of this actual case, which I imagine
the
would
bare
be
bones.
The bare bones. Yeah, it might look like a bare bone, or it might even be in the shape of a wooden dagger or something, which is quite appropriate.
Nice.
So basically what you do is that you meet a group of tourists. I think it's, what, 8 maximum? Is that right?
15 maximum.
15 maximum. Okay, so you have a group of tourists with you. You meet them in a location in Soho, and you walk through Soho, visiting various little spots on the way. It's a 2-hour walk, but you walk about one square mile?
It's good. Even mile. People on crutches can do it.
So there's not a huge amount of walking involved.
No. And we have a tea break as well. So halfway through, you can have a cup of tea.
God, it just sounds perfect.
It's good. It's good even for kind of rainy days. And the odd thing on my walk, this will surprise you and your listeners and even me as well. What would you say? Who would you say is more likely to come on my walk? What type of person?
I'd say sort of young people, kind of people who like horror movies, you know, like 20 year old students who yep. like kind of horror films and stuff like that.
Yep, I would say the same. Unfortunately, it's not. It's all women in their late 30s, early 40s.
Really?
Yeah, it's at the moment, it's 87% women.
Interesting.
I don't know why.
Maybe they're attracted by your your mysterious charm.
That could be it, although I doubt it. No, I think women like the macabre, you know, the darkness.
You think so?
Kind of horror stories, whereas men are kind of, they'll kind of take it or leave it.
Really?
I think men kind of like facts, whereas women like the kind of, you know, because all of these stories are mostly about relationships, it's kind of that how's a good way to explain it? It's kind of the ups and downs of a relationship. It's kind of the darkness, and I think they like that.
The human drama.
Human drama.
And the
correct.
Mystery of what motivates, you know, people to do things.
Yeah.
And there's a certain amount of romance, I suppose, in these stories, because often, you know, of course we're dealing with you know, quite horrific crimes or whatever, but often the situations in which these crimes occurred, there's a lot of passion involved,
yep.
and there's a lot of sort of, it's usually as a result of some love affair or something like that. So interesting human drama, emotions and passion and stuff like that. And well, I mean, according to you, if lots of women are attending your tours, then that must mean that they're the kinds of people who are attracted by that stuff,
totally, which is
lucky for you, isn't it, Moz?
I love it. Lovely ladies. But yeah, no, it's interesting that I would have thought that the grisly nature, because I don't hold back.
Really? It's quite explicit?
Oh, totally. I had a, it's meant to be adults only, but I had an 8-year-old child on the walk. I did a Mother's Day special. Because for our listeners, it was Mother's Day in Britain last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was 2 tours on Mother's Day, which were full.
Really?
Two absolutely full tours. And everyone had invited their mothers along, and it was a treat, and all the mums were loving it. But someone had brought their 8-year-old daughter along.
Mm.
So I thought, I'm not going to hold back. I'm going to tell them everything, because I do tell them everything.
I imagine you said in advance, you said to the parent, look, I'm, you know, you realize that this is an 18 rated, this is like a adult rated experience, and you know, I'll let you decide whether you allow the daughter to be here, but it, you know, it's your decision, but this is an adult rated experience.
Absolutely.
Did you do that?
I told them everything. I played it very carefully, but I didn't censor myself.
Mm.
But what I did was, because I have a niece around the same age,
yeah.
I judged the content based on what I thought was acceptable for my own niece.
Yeah.
And when there were some bits that I thought that were quite sexually explicit in nature, even though this is a Sunday morning, there are some grisly details in there. Mm. What I would do was turn to the 8-year-old girl and put my fingers in my ears so she could do the same.
Very good.
But I can say that the weirdest walk I ever did, this was a couple of weeks ago. I was meant to have 8 people on the walk, but 6 postponed. So I was left with just 2.
Mm.
And at the start of my walk to get people interested, I do a bit of banter. So it's kind of a bit of cheeky conversation to let people know the rules and what we're going to get up to. And there's a couple of cheeky jokes thrown in there.
Mm-hmm.
The man and the woman who were in front of me didn't laugh.
Oh.
Didn't react at all. And I thought, uh-oh, it's going to be one of those days. Mm. So anyway, we were walking to the first murder location. And I just casually turned to them and said, just out of interest, English? With a hint of question mark on the end of the accent. And they shook their heads at me.
Mm.
And I worked out that he was Spanish. She was French. They both spoke Spanish and French, but no English.
Right.
And so I don't speak Spanish or French.
Mm. So you did the whole thing in through the medium of dance?
Oh, yeah. No, I did the whole thing in mime.
Seriously?
Yeah. So a 2-hour tour of which it's taken me a year to write and rehearse. It's effectively a whole play. So it's all I have to remember every single line in my head. But what I did instead was I mimed it to them. And after a while, we started developing a shorthand with each other.
Really?
So I could turn up to a location. I could do a sign for death. I could say Dennis, and they would know exactly who I was talking about. And yeah, it became really funny.
Sounds amazing.
It was really tiring because I'd had 3 cracked ribs at that moment and a bad neck. So, but I still did it.
God.
What a hero.
You had cracked ribs.
Yes, that was, I had a bit of an incident on the boat.
Oh, really? What, you fell off the boat or something?
Yeah, I fell off the boat into the water and cracked 3 ribs.
Oh, mate.
Yeah. I was drunk. I couldn't feel it.
Oh, dude.
Okay, can I just say for your listeners, I'm not always drunk.
Yeah.
These are just rare incidents.
I promise. He doesn't drink any more than the average English man.
That's true. That's very true.
Which is probably quite a lot, to be honest. No, it's fine. It's fine. I guess, you know, living on a boat, you know, it can be a little tricky sometimes.
It can be. It was just after my birthday, so a lot of people had very kindly bought me presents, but very heavy presents.
I see.
So I fell into the canal holding about 6 bottles.
Oh, mate. And you all
and about
right?
10 books. Yeah, no, I'm good. My ribs are starting to repair now. I can now breathe and sit up.
That's important. Especially the breathing part.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of breathing.
Me too. Me too. Now, speaking of breathing or not breathing, as the case may be, can you tell us one or maybe 2 of the murder mystery stories that you have on your tour?
That was a very tenuous link.
Did you like that?
I was wondering where that was going because, like, breathing exercise. Oh, murder walks.
Yeah, I can link anything, Moz. Give me 2 subjects, I'll link them. It might take me half an hour, but I'll do it.
NATO and baked beans.
NATO and baked beans. Well, obviously NATO is a very important organization. They do lots of different international related issues. Obviously they're famous for, you know, peacekeeping. What many people don't realize though is that they also have to deal with a lot of dealing with supplies, you know, when there's been an environmental disaster or maybe, you know, a wartime crisis, and a lot of people are left without food or drinking water. And what NATO, what they do is they may provide some food and sustenance for people who need it, and they may or may not give people baked beans as a way of keeping them alive as part of their duties.
That was a whole minute.
A whole minute of nonsense.
A tenuous link.
I've done that before. I've done many similar minutes on the podcast before, Moz.
Very good.
I'm sure my listeners are familiar with that kind of stuff. But anyway, let's get back to the murder mysteries. Tell us a story.
Okie dokie. Well, there's actually one that I love telling. And I've invited people from the tour who actually live in Soho, which is the area where I do the walk. Mm. And when I've told them this story, I keep saying story, but it's all true.
Yeah.
Even they're shocked because they don't know about it. Now, most people know about Jack the Ripper. He's apparently the world's most famous serial killer who killed loads of women in the 1880s, and we still don't know who he is. Mm-hmm. But there was another Ripper in 1942 in the centre of London, actually in Soho. But much of his story has been suppressed by the press and the government at the time. Because of World War II, everyone's morale was very weakened. So even to this day, much of his story remains unsolved, untold.
Yeah.
And he is known, your listeners can go onto my website, www.murdermiletours.com, uh-huh. or type in the Blackout Ripper.
Okay.
And basically what he would do, he was an RAF airman. Over the space of just 6 days, he murdered 4 women, attempted to kill 2 others. And basically, because of the blackout, during World War II, what they would do is insist that all the street lamps were off, all the house lights were out, you'd have your curtains closed and your door was shut.
No light at all.
No light at all. So he would use the darkness in order to, and his RAF uniform, which was very official, to knock on ladies' doors and attack them in their own houses. God. I won't go into details about what he did because it was absolutely horrific. But he is more brutal than Jack the Ripper. He's real. He existed. But his story remains untold even today.
Wow.
I know. And the great thing on the walk is I have all of the pictures from all of the evidence and all of the pictures of all his victims as they were. I don't show pictures of when they're, when they've been mutilated.
No,
because I prefer to show them, pay respect to them.
Yeah.
But it's a horrific story.
When you hear stories like that, and I mean, it's fascinating that this is like a little untold story because of the context in which it took place. You know, people didn't want to share the stories of this murder at that time because, people were trying to, keep the morale up, as you said. And also there was plenty of other action going on in other areas. And so this kind of went unnoticed and unspoken about. Why do you think a man would do that? Why would he use that as an opportunity to go round and commit crimes like that?
It's an odd one. That's a question that everyone asks on my walk, because on all of the 18 murderers that we investigate on the walk, I can give you very detailed reasons why they got involved. So for example, on my murder walk is that the Britain's actually most notorious serial killer, Dennis Nielsen, who murdered 15 vulnerable young men and attempted to kill 2 others, all in, I think it was about 4 years he did it. But his whole story, I won't go into the graphic details on your podcast.
Yeah.
But his whole story is about the fact that he was abandoned by his parents when he was very young. And when his grandfather died, he felt that he'd been rejected by his grandfather dying. So his whole story is about trying to find someone who will love him but won't reject him. So basically, what he would do, find, because he was a homosexual gentleman, he would go in search of younger men who he would find attractive. He would strangle them.
Yeah.
Therefore, they wouldn't be mutilated. And he would dress them and seat them in a chair next to him so he could talk and have conversations with them.
Oh, my God.
And that way, he could, he could go to bed with them. He could kiss with them. A whole relationship with these dead men, but they would never reject him because they were dead.
That's incredible. Obviously, that's horrible, but that's also fascinating in a way because it kind of makes you think, oh, so the guy just needed a friend. But obviously, that's Where do you stand on things like, I mean, personally, Mods, I mean, I don't know if you have the answers to questions like this, but where do you stand on things like punishments for this sort of thing? I mean, you know, in that period, when was that again? When did that happen?
Nielsen was 78 to 83.
So 1978 to 1983. Mm. That in that period, we didn't have the death penalty. I think in many countries where people are listening to this, if someone had done that and been caught, they would be sentenced to death as a punishment. We don't have the death penalty in the UK anymore.
In Nielsen's case, he was originally, because most of his victims they couldn't find, because he actually he dismembered them, but he also burnt most of them on a very large bonfire.
Oh my God.
So I don't know why there's a lot more sicker things that he did that I will not go into on this podcast. But he built a large bonfire, put a rubber tire on the top, like a car tire, set fire to it so that disguised the smell of burning flesh.
Yeah.
Which is why he only got charged with 6 counts of murder instead of 15, because they can't find the rest of the bodies.
I see.
He got charged with 25 years in prison, which is the British equivalent of a life sentence. But that was later extended to a whole life sentence, which means he'll never be released.
Yeah, I see. Wow. He's still in prison now.
Yeah, he's 70. It was his birthday last November. I didn't send him a card. I should have done.
Imagine if you'd sent him a card, what would you have written? Well, hello. What's his name? Dennis.
Dear Dennis.
Hello, Dennis. You bastard.
Do you know what? It's interesting. It's his story is quite horrific. All the details.
Yeah.
But ironically, on the walk, it's the comedy moment.
Really? Yeah. Yeah.
When I tell his story, because it's kind of people actually really enjoy it. They go, "Oh, good old Dennis." It's quite amusing in a way.
They get to know him during the tour. Yeah.
And it's kind of the irony of it. It's like I do a line in there, like I introduce it at the start, because what I did was I discovered that he actually worked in a job centre in Denmark Street. Mm-hmm. Actually, can I tell this tiny story?
Yeah, go ahead.
So this is where the story starts, and this got me quite excited, because what I like about the murder walk is not grisly details, but I like things that kind of draw you in, little details that just make you go, that's interesting.
Mm.
And basically, the start of the walk is I go, this is Denmark Street. There used to be a job center here. This is where Dennis Nielsen worked for 5 years. During this time, he murdered 15 vulnerable young men. And I go through the history of all the men that he murdered.
Yeah.
Then I go, but of course, none of them were murdered here at Denmark Street. And everyone looks at me very strange, thinking, why have I included this in a murder walk?
Right.
And it's this detail that I love. I go, well, every Christmas, the job centre would host a Christmas party. With Dennis Nielsen as the boss of the job centre, he had to keep the costs down. Therefore, he'd ask each member of staff to bring with them something to help out, whether that was food or decorations or music. In Dennis Nielsen's case, he would always make the mulled wine. Now, in the story, I've already told the audience that what Dennis Nielsen used to do was chop up many of his victims, but in order so they couldn't be identified, he would boil their heads in a large metal pot so he could get rid of the skin and the eyes and the brains. But of course, he used the same pot to make a very British Christmas drink called mulled wine.
Oh, my God.
Which he served to his staff.
So the British food really is that bad?
Oh, yeah. No, it all tastes horrible. It was great over Christmas because the pub that we finish in, which is Dennis Nielsen's favourite pub, served mulled wine.
Oh, my God. Oh, really?
Yeah.
And so did you drink it?
Oh, yeah, totally. But it's great. It's kind of a joke along the walk that everyone goes, I start the walk by going through that door in 1978, walked a pleasant, if slightly shy man. And everyone knows that's code for Dennis Nielsen. So every time I repeat it on the rest of the walk, everyone smiles because they know exactly what's going
to
happen.
Right. So after you've got to know Dennis Nielsen from where he worked and where he served this mulled wine at Christmas parties, this mulled wine with his particular taste.
Oh, yes.
It had been made in the same pot that he used for other things, let's say.
I hope he washed it out.
Let's hope so. So after you told that story, you then visit the locations where these things happened, these murders that he committed happened, and then you can say, and in this building, a pleasant yet shy young man walked through the door.
And everybody knows. Everyone. In fact, I even turn to the audience and go, whose name was? And they all go, Dennis Nielsen.
right, I see.
But it's funny. It's funny how something so horrific can be the high point, the joke. It's like I use it as some of the murders that are very, very downbeat. Mm. Like, it's hard to recover from it. There's one that I investigated, which no one talks about. Even locals have chosen to forget about it. It's the Denmark Street Fire.
Okay.
Basically, Denmark Street is a very popular part of Soho. It's where bands such as the Rolling Stones, the Sex Pistols, they either recorded or some of their famous tracks or lived there.
I know Denmark Street very well because that's where I used to go to buy all my musical equipment.
Oh, okay.
They have all the guitar shops, the drum shops there on Denmark Street. It's like one of my favourite streets in London. And I bought guitars, drums and other stuff in Denmark Street. And those guitar shops have been there for years. Love Denmark Street.
Absolutely ages, yes. Well, up the road, you've probably noticed a bar called, I think it's called, it used to be called Bar 51.
Is that the 12 Bar Club?
12 Bar, yes. Yeah. It got changed to 12 Bar. That is 23 Denmark Street, which is the fire of the scene of the Denmark Street fire.
Really?
And 16th of August 1980. Both clubs were quite popular with immigrants from Spain and South America. It was kind of their place to congregate and meet like-minded people, but obviously quite a few were illegally into the country. There were two clubs on each floor. There was Rodos on the first floor and El Hueco, which I'm reliably informed translates as the hole. But obviously some of your listeners can help me out with that.
Uh-huh.
They were deemed illegal by the authorities, so that the council shut them down. But so on the 16th of August, they decided to host a farewell party. 150 people packed into just two floors.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it was an amazing party. The music was pumping. Everyone was having a great time, except one man. He was slightly unhappy. This is not my pattern. This is not how I tell the story. He was slightly unhappy.
Yeah.
He was slightly overcharged for a drink, he felt.
Yeah.
So he was booted out of the club.
Right.
And then about 20 minutes later, he blocked the only entrance or exit to both clubs, knelt down with a box of matches, and poured through the letterbox a gallon of petrol.
Oh, my God.
I've got the fire brigade incident reports. In fact, I read them to the audience. So it's facts. I don't gloss it. It's facts. And
I was going to say, it's a bit of an overreaction, isn't it? Like, if you're in a party and everyone else is having a good time and someone refuses to serve you a drink, you don't then burn the place down, right? What you can do is maybe go home, have a cup of tea and complain. Bloody party or stupid people.
Write a letter.
Write a letter. Go home, leave an angry...
Yes, sir.
write an angry letter. Complain about it on Facebook. Don't burn the building down, okay,
maybe
everyone?
Put some expletives in it.
Yeah, swear as much as you like.
Yeah,
Don't burn any buildings down as a general rule.
It's horrific. I mean, in that building, 38 people died. They're uncertain of the 150 who were in the building how many were injured.
Right.
Because being illegal, many of them walked away. The fire was so intense and so fast that many of those who died still sitting in the seats that they were in.
Wow.
Quite a few were slumped at the bar. The fire investigator said that they still had drinks in their hands.
Wow.
That's how fast it was.
So the fire just went vroom, woof, straight through the building.
Yeah, totally. No one could get out. People were throwing themselves from the second and third floors, their clothes on fire, throwing themselves into the street, smashing their bones.
Wow.
It's horrific. And very little has been told about this story.
I didn't realise that that had happened at that location. I've been to that spot loads of times. I've played gigs in that spot. you know, God. Music gigs in that place. I never realized. I knew it had like a sort of grungy atmosphere, and that's where they played like, you know, rock and roll music and stuff. But God, I didn't know that that had happened.
Neither did I. I've lived in London for 20 years. And I was, it was only when I was digging, I was not physically digging, I was trying to find murders on in Soho. And I read on a forum somewhere, someone said, wasn't there a nightclub that caught fire on Poland Street? And me being me, I made a note and then carried on. And then I thought, let's just dig further. And then I found out it was Denmark Street. I found out where it was. I found the pictures. I found the list of the dead, which is yet to be released. But on my walk, I as a kind of memorial, I do a list of the dead so you can see who did die.
Right.
Very little has been written about this murder. And in fact, it's the most deadly. It's the deadliest blaze since the Blitz. So since World War II.
Wow.
And yet there's never been a memorial to any of them who have died.
Okay. And at this point in your tour, is this when you have a cup of tea? I suppose that cup of tea is very welcome, isn't it?
No, this is so I do Dennis Nielsen first and the mulled wine.
Yeah.
Because that's on Denmark Street as well.
Yeah.
That's directly opposite Bar 12. And then I do the Denmark Street fire, which is a massive downer. It's a huge downer. Everyone's really depressed, especially the fact that the guy who committed the fire, I end it by saying, what was his name? I can't remember. The guy who committed the fire, he died in 2008 alone in prison after a very long battle with cancer.
Right, so there's some justice in the world.
There's justice, but everyone is really depressed. But then I pick them up and I tell them a story. And it's the story of the second tour I ever did, which was only two ladies. And they were very nice and very chatty, very nice ladies, very bubbly. And, small group, but we were having a wonderful time.
Yeah.
And as we stood in front of the scene of the Denmark Street fire, I was doing the story about Dennis Nielsen, which is directly opposite.
Yeah.
One of the ladies looked, she went very pale and she went very quiet. And I said, "Are you okay?" And she said, yeah, just tell the story. So I told the Dennis Nielsen story, but all the time, standing in front of the scene of the Denmark Street fire, which she didn't know, she kept looking behind herself.
Yeah.
And she looked really freaked out. So when we moved across the street and I said, the next location you were actually standing in front of, she nudged her friend and said, "I told you so." And I said, "What's wrong?" And she said, "As we were standing in front of that building, it felt as if someone hot was touching me, someone with very hot hands." And I said, "That's uncanny because I'm now about to tell you about the Denmark Street fire."
Wow.
I know.
Oh, that's so creepy.
It was even more creepy later on because I thought, okay, let's test these so-called psychics because I don't believe in it.
Yeah.
And I took her to a location in the centre of Soho, which is a nice residential building and a nice kind of Piazza Square, you know, cobbled streets, and very, very grand, very, very beautiful. And as she got there, she looked like she was about to be sick.
Mm.
And I said, "Are you okay?" And she went, "Is this a plague pit? As in the big pits where they used to dump all the plague victims during the 17th century?" And I went, "Yeah, actually, it was." She knew it.
And what? And she
could sense it.
She was right.
She was absolutely right. It's Soho has three massive plague pits. One of them is so big. How can I describe it? It covers a huge area. So it's probably the size of maybe three football fields.
Really?
Yeah,
that's massive.
That goes from Carnaby Street down Poland Street. And the area is beautiful, but you wouldn't know that.
Now, of course, I mean, back in the 17th century, it was a place where they had to dispose of the bodies of people who died from the plague, which tore all the way through Europe. You know, God, horrible. But nowadays it's a bustling place with shops and cafes and restaurants and beautiful looking people walking around. No one knows. No one realizes.
No, there's still bodies underneath the floors, underneath the buildings, because there were literally thousands of bodies. And because there were so many, they had to pack them underground in basically what they refer to as lasagna. So you'd have a layer of bodies, then a layer of quicklime to dissolve the bodies, then another layer of bodies, and it would build in kind of 20-foot deep layers.
Goodness me. And this woman sensed it when she arrived there. She was like, was this a plague pit? And you yeah. You were surprised and you said yes. Wow, that's amazing. So she could sense it. But I wonder, yeah, that's amazing. That is very interesting.
It creeped me out because I don't believe in psychics.
No, neither do I. I've talked about this subject on the podcast before. I know I've got several listeners who do believe in it. It's interesting conversation. I'm open-minded enough to, well, my position is I'm skeptical about, you know, psychics and things like that. And I'm not going to accept or just blindly accept without enough evidence that that sort of thing happens. So I'm not saying it doesn't. It's not possible to detect things that happened in the past. I just think there may be a rational explanation for it rather than jumping to the conclusion that we have magical powers, you know.
I always say to people, because I don't believe in it, but I only don't believe in it because I've not experienced it. But I always say that it's interesting how every culture, even before the last 200 or 300 years where we learnt to kind of migrate, every single culture has ghosts as part of their culture.
Yeah.
And yet never once did we ever come together and go, hey, we should all talk about ghosts.
That's very true.
So there has to be something. Also, it's good. It's good for my tour.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Which does, I have to say, Moz, you convinced me. It sounds like a brilliant tour. And I'm going to, speak to the wife next time we're in town.
Cool.
I'd love to go on one of the tours. Is it, when is it, every day or every weekend?
No, at the moment I do two every Sunday. But because we're not quite in season at the moment, but very soon I'll be doing two Sundays, two on Saturdays, probably some weekday ones as well.
Okay, so, and people can check it out at murdermiletours.com.
Oh, yes, and there's lots of, there's a nice big wall on there, so basically lots of pictures, and you can click on the different pictures and read about all the different grisly murders, including Dennis Nielsen and his pot of mulled wine.
Okay, and I mean, I call you Moz, but your full name's Michael J. Buchanan Dunn. Shall I say that?
Abraham Levi Goldstein III.
That's your official...
That's a lie. That's a lie.
Okay. Is your name like on your website? I mean, is it... Do you publish your name?
I don't think I do. It's probably somewhere, though.
Would you like me to include your name there? Do you want me to keep that bit in?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah?
I don't mind that.
Okay.
I think I've got my name is actually on different websites where I, because each week I have to try and sell it to different people. So I have to kind of, so if you type in Murder Mile, you'll see loads of different things like Murder Mile Valentine's Day special.
Right.
So my name's on there. That's my way of kind of advertising it to different people.
Yeah.
Mother's Day special. I'm just doing the Murder Mile. What's it called? The Murder Mile pub crawl.
Okay.
So you get to go on a murder walk and a pub crawl.
Brilliant.
What a great idea.
Two birds with one stone.
Exactly.
But I'm just wondering if any of my listeners, you know, are up for it, if they're going to be in London and they fancy a different kind of tour.
Yes.
And they do go to murdermiletours.com and they sign up with something and they meet you, then they can say hello, Moz, or they... Moz, I suppose. They can say, hello, Moz. I listen to you on Luke's English podcast.
Oh, yes, that would be amazing. It would be amazing to meet some of your listeners. And actually, I will take pictures of myself with them so we can post it on your website.
Yeah, definitely.
That would be wonderful.
I just wanted to ask my listeners at this point, hello, listeners, are you okay? Is everyone all right? You're not feeling,
yes.
You're not feeling too freaked out? Yes, we're fine, Luke. Say the Liz. Yeah, we're fine. We're fine. It got a little bit creepy there, but we're all okay.
Oh, it can get worse.
I'm sure it does.
Come on the walk and you'll be... Sometimes I have to turn to some of the guests and go, are you okay? Some people look quite like they're going to be sick, but I think that's half the thrill, is that people like pushing themselves. They like the feeling of fear. There's nothing worse than looking at a building and someone going, in the 17th century, a poker game happened here and someone got stabbed. That's boring.
Yeah.
Whereas if you tell a story, and one of the stories with the Blackout Ripper, I start the story very early and I explain about one of the victims, about how she was an actress. She came all the way from Yorkshire. She made her way to London in the hope of working on the West End stage. But obviously, World War II happened. She couldn't get any work, so she had to become a prostitute. She kind of felt forced.
Mm.
But it was the only way that she felt that she could make money. And that ultimately was what killed her.
Right. The rest is detailed in the full tour, I suppose.
Mm. But it's great because it draws you into their lives and it makes you feel quite sorry for them,
yeah.
Which I think you need an emotional response.
Yeah. Well, it sounds gripping, and even though it is a bit disgusting, it's definitely not boring, which is like, yeah. There's nothing, for me, there's nothing worse than boring. You know, it's like the worst word in the world. You know, if one of my students ever tells me that one of my classes is boring, it breaks my heart. You've got no idea. Like, the word boring is just that horrible word to hear.
Yes.
And you certainly can't use that word to describe these tours. They sound brilliant.
I think, having spent years putting on shows at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, has helped me a lot.
Yeah.
Actually, this is all about, what I did was I sat down and wrote the speech verbatim, and I've memorized 2 hours verbatim. So literally every single word is the same. I have to repeat it because it's all about storytelling. It's all about character. I perform all of it.
Yeah.
So actually performing live for years has taught me a lot about audiences.
Yeah. I remember the first time I saw you do stand-up comedy, Moz, in 2009.
Oh, dear.
That fateful performance that you did as Moz the... Am I going to tell the story?
Yeah, people can go onto YouTube and check it out.
They can, can't they? So Moz and I, you know, listeners, you might know that we did comedy together, you know, back in the day. And first ever show that we did, we were on stage, you know, like we were on the same show. And Moz was the first act. And I think the guy who organized the show, the fantastic Logan Murray, who we've all learned so much from, Logan put you on first because he thought you were going to do this light-hearted performance about a popular drink, and that you're going to do this funny performance about a drink, and it was all going to be very light-hearted about
the
orange juice.
Bongo Explorer.
Yeah, like a tropical juice. You were going to make fun of this juice. And so Logan was like, I'll put Moz on first. It's a safe bet. But unbeknownst to him, you didn't tell Logan, you changed your act. And you, on the night, you did the cannibal routine, Moz the cannibal. And listeners, you know, I had friends there and stuff all waiting for me to come on. And everyone's nervous because all their friends were going to be performing comedy for the first time. And you came up on stage and, listeners, Moz was dressed in an old suit and he covered himself in blood. There was blood. There was like fake blood dripping down his face, and he then did this macabre performance as Moz the cannibal, telling the stories of his sad life and the weird things that he'd been doing. And so that everyone was a bit shocked, you know. They were a bit shocked by that. They were like, "Bloody hell, what was that? That was a bit strong," you know. It kind of took people by surprise. It was certainly kind of a shocking beginning to the evening. That was a bit shocking, but it seems that over the years you've done other comedy shows. We've talked about it on this podcast before. You've been to Edinburgh, so yeah. You've done the performances on stage and things, and now it seems that it's kind of come together in the form of this tour, which is really good. So it involves so many different things like research and performance. Brilliant.
It's interesting. I would never have considered myself a tour guide in my life, but I was trying to find something that encapsulates or fulfills everything that I love, which is, as you say, performance, writing, research, meeting people, history. And I've always wanted to do this. When I was about 5 years old, I came up with the idea for Murder Mile.
Really?
Yeah, but thought it would never happen. And then when I got made redundant, which was beautiful time, got paid lots of money to not work anymore, and decided to set up Murder Mile.
Great.
And I have to say, it's the best job ever.
Well, I'm very happy for you. It sounds like lots of fun.
And work one day a week.
One day a week. Oh, great. And the rest of the time you get to enjoy your time on the boat.
Oh, yes.
In the sunshine, sticking your dongle out of the window.
Yes.
How is it there now? What's going on? Is the sun still shining there in East London?
It's beautiful, actually. I was actually sitting on the roof before we started doing this, reading a book, having an apple, a cup of tea, feeding. We've got loads of ducks here. So ducks, Canadian geese, and coots.
Yeah.
Coots are beautiful, little, kind of smaller than ducks, but with a very kind of white mask over the top of their heads.
These birds that live on the water.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It sounds like a really nice existence. Mars, it's been really cool to have you on the podcast again.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks a lot for telling the stories and, you know, good luck with the tours. I hope you get some of my listeners on there.
Yes, that would be lovely. They are all welcome.
Okay, fantastic.
I promise not to kill them.
Oh, good. Good, 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 good. Or feed them any mulled wine that has been prepared in dodgy circumstances. All right. Well, nice one, Moz. Take care. I suppose you can now go back on the roof of the boat and enjoy the sunshine.
I think I might do. Okay. I was reading a book about death, actually.
And there we were thinking it was like such a nice innocent scene with you enjoying a simple cup of tea and an apple, feeding the ducks on the roof in the sunshine, reading a book about death.
It's a book on the history of London's graveyards. I like nice cheerful stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. All right. Okay, Moz, nice one. So that's it. MurderMileTours.com, ladies and gents. Have a look. Thanks, Moz.
No worries.
All right, have a nice... enjoy the book about death and ducks.
I will do.
Okay, cheers, mate.
Bye.
Bye. So there you go. That was the chat with Moz. How do you feel? You feel all right? Yeah. Now, personally, I don't feel too upset or disturbed by those stories. I just find them intriguing. I think it's amazing what has happened in the past and what people do and their motivations, you know? I think that people are fascinating and mysterious creatures, aren't they? And it's weird that... isn't it weird that that woman sensed the sight of that plague pit? That's all a bit weird. And very interesting indeed. And I can't wait to go on one of those walks on a Sunday next time I'm in London. So you can check out Murder Mile Tours by visiting murdermiletours.com. And if you're going to be in London at some point, then I think this could be a really cool tour for you to join. Because you'll get to see some really cool spots in Soho, like Denmark Street with its guitar shops. And you can hang out and have a cup of tea and a chat with Moz. And maybe, you know, hang out for a bit longer and go to a pub or something and drink beer, you know, if he's got the time. And you could maybe talk nonsense with him for a little while. Buy him a pint. He might like that. So that's pretty much it from this episode. Thank you again for listening. I look forward to reading your comments on the page for this episode. And I invite you to just let us all know, you know, how it was for you. So we're almost done, but you know what, ladies and gents, that's in fact not the end of the episode. I know it's already long, but it's going to get longer because I'm now going to play you an outtake. So let me explain. Earlier in the episode, you heard us talking about swearing, and I bleeped out pretty much all of the swear words that was in that part of the conversation, mainly for comedy purposes, but I thought it was just sort of, I don't know, somehow I thought it was appropriate to bleep them out, considering we were talking about bleeping them out. But after we finished our conversation, Moz and I continued talking, and we came back to the subject of swear words, and we decided to just let rip a little bit, okay? So it's to let rip, do you know what that means? Well, that means just to express your emotions or thoughts without holding yourself back, okay? So it's just like, just let rip. And so in this case, we decided to let rip with some swearing. So we'd been a bit careful earlier in the conversation. Now at the end, we were like, oh, come on, let's start recording again. Let's have a swear-a-thon. Okay, so we let rip with a swear-a-thon. So here it is, a mini outtake, sort of like a sequel to the swearing podcast I did a couple of years ago with my brother. And here it is, a super-duper X-rated outtake with Moz just after we finished the interview. And here is another warning. Yes, that's right. I'm going to sort of patronize you again with another warning. You're about to hear loads of swearing now. If you're offended by the rudest words in the language, please stop listening now. Okay, you got it? If you're not offended by swearing, then wonderful. Keep listening. It's pretty simple, isn't it, really? Do you take the blue pill or do you take the red pill? It's your choice. Listen, not listen. Hear the swear words. Okay, that's enough explaining and justifying. Let the swearing commence. I've got an idea, Boz. I've just hit record again. Let's do an outtake. Let's do a bonus post jingle bonus where we do loads of swearing. But what are we going to do?
I could tell you more about Mrs. Brown's boys.
I think we should just. Are we just going to say loads of swear words now?
Yeah.
Without bleeping them out.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
what's your favourite swear word?
I think it's. Oh, that's a really difficult one to say. I quite like bollocks.
Bollocks.
Oh, that's a load of bollocks.
What about flange?
I'm not sure that's technically a swear word. I think that's just an innuendo.
Do you have to explain that to your listeners?
No, I want you to explain that to my listeners. Go on then.
A flange is, well, actually, it is a device for kind of cleaning a sink out. It's kind of more like a flannel. It's part of a sink, isn't it? But flange is also used for a lady's.
It's a lady's. I can hear a helicopter in the background, Moz.
Yeah, there's a Chinook going over.
They're coming to get you. They'd be like,
we've heard reports of swearing on a podcast. Send in special branch. The suspect is on a narrow boat. He's got his dongles hanging out the window.
And he's only wearing pants, as always.
Now, let's do a little swear off that. So it was fucking brilliant to have you on the fucking podcast.
It's fucking great. I fucking loved it.
You fucking bastard.
Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck your listeners. I didn't fucking mean that, listeners. I absolutely fucking love all of you.
That was a lot of F-bombs. But
that was a fuckload of F-bombs.
One thing that is interesting about the word fuck is that it's so versatile. It can be placed in any position in a sentence. You know, you can put it almost anywhere. I think it may be the most versatile word in the English language. You know, you've got like, pick a sentence like, what are you doing in my bed? This is the classic example. What are you doing in my bed? You could say fucking, what are you doing in my bed? Right? You could say, what the fuck are you doing in my bed? You could say, what are you fucking doing in my bed? You could say, what are you doing fucking in my bed? You could say, never. What are you doing in my bed, you fuck?
My friend Sarah starts every sentence with the word fucking.
Really?
It's kind of her way of... Do you know some people put in ums and ahs in order to kind of think their way around a sentence? She goes... Fucking! Do you know what? Like that.
Yeah.
Just many of your listeners, that's acceptable to do in the English language, is to start a sentence with the word fucking, but elongate it.
That's
fucking! I want to see how you bleep that, Luke. Fucking!
Oh no, I'm going to have to bleep these, aren't I? This is going to take about 3 hours out of my day.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, man.
This is going to take absolutely fucking ages.
All right, okay. All right, you.
Fuck, 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 fuck. Is that enough fuck?
You.
Lots of fucks. I'm fucking across all of this fucking podcast. Fuck, 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 fuck. With added fuck. And here's an extra fuck for all your listeners. Fuck. Fuckity fuck, fuck.
Oh, you've just given me loads of work, you fucking funk. You fucking
fuck
cunt.
Fuck you.
Okay.
I hope your listeners fucking enjoyed that. I fucking did.
I fucking did too, Moz. I think it's time for you to get arrested by... I think you should put your hands up and surrender to the fucking SAS or whatever it is that's come arrest your ass.
They're going to arrest my ass.
Yeah.
Good luck to them.
Like, just take the ass. We don't need the rest of his body.
The rest of it smells.
That's right. Get a crack squadron. Get a SWAT team down there and arrest this guy's ass.
Fuck yeah.
Okay, ladies and gents, that's it for this fucking bullshit outtake from Luke's English Podcast, which I don't even know if I'm going to publish or not. I'll lie awake at night worrying about whether this should be published or not now.
Yeah, let's do it. It was funny.
To bleep or not to bleep, that is the question.
Yeah. Well, in that case, can we have a sweary at the end unbleeped like this one?
Yeah, okay. I'll do a little caveat and I'll add a big load of fucks at the end. I'll say there's going to... I've run out of steam. That helicopter's looking for you, Moz.
It's really noisy today.
Yeah, well, that's London, I suppose. It's always a police helicopter.
Ah, fuck it.
Yeah, fuck it. Don't fucking matter, you know what I mean?
Man for it.
All right, then. Take care. Enjoy the boat. Enjoy. Don't fall in the water again, you twat. Yeah,
no more. Was that a twat you threw in it?
Yeah, I did.
I think, for listeners... We need to explain that twat is a swear word used between men, but it's actually a reference to a lady's...
Another lady's there on the
podcast.
It
could be the same lady's.
Just one.
Or it could be two.
You mean?
Although that would be twats then, wouldn't it?
Twats.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've had flange, we've had twats, yeah. We've had fuck and fucking, we've had fucking loads of words.
I threw in a cunt in there.
You threw a cunt in there as well. Did you throw a dick in there?
No, but we haven't had a motherfucker either.
We haven't, no.
No. That's the big three.
What? Fuck, cunt, and motherfucker. Yeah. So the great combination is you motherfucking cunt.
Oh, no, it's this. What a beauty.
Fucking you motherfucking cunt.
Fuck flaps. Yay.
Okay, that's the end. Stop. That's enough swearing. Moz,
there we go.
Say goodbye to my listeners.
God bless you, listeners. It's been a pleasure, as always. You cunts.
And on that bombshell, that's the end of this episode. Thanks again for listening. It's been a long one. There'll be more podcasts coming up in the future, but for now, it's time to say goodbye.
Bye, 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 bye.
Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.